Welcome to Syncreate, a show where we explore the intersections between creativity, psychology, and spirituality. Our goal is to demystify the creative process and expand the boundaries of what it means to be creative. I'm Melinda Rothhouse, and I help individuals and organizations bring their creative dreams and visions to life. And just before we get going today, I do want to mention that we are now on Patreon. So if you are enjoying the podcast and you want to support us with a small monthly contribution, this podcast at this point is entirely self-funded. We don't run commercials, so any support helps, and you'll get some exclusive behind-the-scenes access and calls with me and more. So check it out. And I'm so excited today to have my guest, Warren Jackson, on the show. Warren is a professional actor, and you do a lot of Shakespeare, not exclusively Shakespeare, but a lot of Shakespeare. Yeah.
A fair amount.
Fair amount. Well, I want to get into that, but I first want to kind of let folks know how we know each other. So we basically grew up together. From a pretty early age, we went to the same school. You started there at age 5, is that correct?
Preschool.
Preschool, yes. Park Tudor School, Indianapolis, Indiana. And I came in 5th grade, and we graduated together. So we were going through our education that whole time, and we were both in the arts, theater, music. We sang in choirs together. We did theatrical productions, including a production of The Crucible that was quite memorable. So we've both gone on to pursue our creative passions. You went on to get an MFA at the University of Arizona and continued with the acting track, which is amazing. So there's so much to talk about here, but I kind of want to just dive right in to, okay, so you're a Black man working in the realm of Shakespeare, which is traditionally a very kind of white-dominated space, and that's a whole conversation unto itself, but what's that been like for you?
It's been a journey. I think even in this day and age where there's been a turn, even though a lot of Shakespeare has been Eurocentric,
yes,
I feel that in the past 10-15 years, there has certainly been a more concerted effort where storytellers have come to the fore that or people who want to tell these 400, 500-year-old stories in new and more dynamic ways.
Yes.
And it's been great to really come into contact with creatives who have seen beyond what has traditionally been put on paper.
Yeah.
And for those artists who... Yeah, whether it's in casting or whether it's behind the scenes in wardrobe or in lighting or in the set design, you have these certain people and these certain people in these particular disciplines who have been cast by these producers or these artistic directors who are helping to tell these tried and true stories. As I mentioned, in more dynamic ways with different voices. And it's really added, I think, even another layer to the work, to the rich work that is Shakespeare.
Yeah.
It's been a great journey to come into contact with folks who are really expanding and not afraid to ask those questions or to present that picture to their audience.
Yeah. So what made you decide to kind of pursue theater professionally and Shakespeare more specifically? Was there a particular moment or turning point?
Yeah, I was just going to get into it. Shout out to Ball State.
Yeah.
What up? Chirp, chirp. But Ball State was my training ground in undergrad.
Mm-hmm.
So even as you mentioned, Park Tudor was very supportive of the arts, as many high schools were in Indianapolis at the time, still are. And I think what the small classes that we came from was that kind of nascent seed that was planted.
Yeah.
The ability to be on stage, to tell stories through song, through performing arts, through plays, through music, was the seed. And I think it grew more when I went to Ball State. And yeah, when you're in that collegiate realm and you're being challenged, we're all struggling with who we are,
mm-hmm.
what we want to be, all that stuff. And it was, I think I can, one of the points I can narrow in on, it was a production of Master Harold and the Boys, my freshman year at Ball State, and a senior was putting on this production. And it was and Athol Fugard is a South African playwright. And I was walking through the hallway. I looked on the call board, the bulletin board, and I saw the breakdown of who he needed. It's like, how many African American, how many black males are there
right. In
the department? You know? And I thought, you know, what the hell? I mean, it was spring semester of my freshman year, and we did Crucible the fall before.
Yeah.
I wasn't that far removed, but I still had that, I had that great experience with the Crucible, which is kind of a little nudge, and to see this call on the board, it was like, yeah, I'm going to try it. And once I auditioned, and through that audition process and getting the role, the one of the lead characters, it's a three-person show, mm-hmm. by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I think, my first intimate deep dive into a rehearsal process,
yeah.
into character development, into the ins and outs of, in high school, we usually have a weekend, three performances.
Yeah.
We had a whole week. So to stretch and go, ooh, you got 5 days, and we didn't have shows on Monday and Tuesday, but Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, that kind of stamina to come to a role and you're out doing, you're going to classes and then coming back in, and the discipline to dig into it over time. That really whetted my appetite even more for what it could be.
Yeah.
And I got a little sidetracked. I went into telecommunications, and then I really knuckled down and said, wait a minute, what am I really happy mm-hmm. doing?
Mm-hmm.
And one of my advisors had asked me that question, and I came back, and it was a gut check moment.
Yeah.
Fourth semester, senior year. And it's like, what do I really want to do? And it came back to acting, came back to performing.
Yeah.
And I took a fifth year to really complete the credits and the major and everything. And that's kind of the short condensed version. But that's, starting with that production, that was kind of the
seed of it all.
The seed of it all.
That's great. What's your favorite role that you've played? I imagine you get asked that a lot in interviews, but.
Favorite role. I think what allowed me to, there's a lot that goes into it. I mean, it's the people who you're around, who you're telling the story with. There was this off Broadway, production of Titus Andronicus in New York that I did with New York Shakespeare Exchange. And I was tapped to play the character of Aaron. While traditionally he is a villain, and comes across as such because of the machinations he kind of, the character drives in the play. I think that role was one where it was a happy marriage of concept. It was set in Dust Bowl era, like Oklahoma. We did it but the stage was adapted under like a big top circus tent.
Yeah.
And we were vagabond-ish, you know? But even in telling this story in ancient Rome and translating it to this to that particular era, that role, playing Aaron, playing this villain, and finding, just mining the text for his humanity and his care of his son, of his child, of the revenge he sought and why he was thought he was justified in doing it. I felt like that role was certainly one of my favorites. That play was, that experience was certainly one of my favorites to be a part of.
Yeah. Well, and you touched on something I want to come back to, which I think is so important. It's not just the play, right, or the character. It's the ensemble. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you're in a theatrical production, there's a whole community that comes together and gets really close and really connected for that time. Mm-hmm. And that makes a huge difference, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It certainly does. And the director is the driving force of that, or the artistic director who really sets the tone. And going back to a little bit of your question earlier about, you know, black and brown faces being in that space where it's traditionally Eurocentric.
Yeah.
I think it is that rare artistic director or director who is able to push beyond that boundary and allow that actor to feel a part of it, while even the character of Aaron is specified as a black Moor, but not necessarily letting the ethnicity be a focal point, but what that character needs and wants is of greater import than, you know, what they look like. And I'm sure we see there are examples in popular culture or whatever, but I know in the theater, it's been refreshing to be a part of, and I've seen the other side of it too, but with those directors who are able to take the story and not make it about that.
Right. You know?
And I think it was as much that experience and working with those directors that allowed that role, even though he's a villain, and even though he initiates some really despicable things, but it allowed me to have a love for that character and do what I was able to do with it.
Yeah. So there's like a humanizing element, you know, it really strikes me with any kind of storytelling. There's the specificity of that character, that story, that context,
that
culture. But then there's a universality of it, right, as well. Mm-hmm. There's something that we could each relate to in pretty much any character.
Right,
No
doubt.
Yeah. So that's a great example. I'm curious, you know, how you prepare for a role. You know, there's so many different kind of types of acting methods and ways of preparing. So what has worked well for you as you take on a new role?
I think across the board, it is diving into the text.
Yeah.
And it's been great to be in a position, at least the last few years, where the audition process occurs and, you know, you get the role and there's plenty of lead time up to first rehearsal. And there's been this kind of movement, this thing of directors that, you know, come in off book.
Yeah.
And then as a professional, I'm sitting here thinking, well, wait a minute. I ain't getting paid, you know.
Right.
I'm doing.
Right.
I'm doing
and for those who don't know, being off books means you've memorized all your lines
right,
in advance. Right.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And you come in to the rehearsal process, you know, and like, so I think when I was younger, you know, you're out to please people.
Yeah.
You want to do the thing.
Yeah.
But I've kind of eased up and like, okay, so first things first, if I know I got the role, I'm going to explore other scripts and what's online or pick up in the bookstore and read the text and read the play.
Right.
Because 9 times out of 10 with Shakespeare, and not so much contemporary plays, but with Shakespeare, it's cut. So it's been abbreviated. So you come into rehearsal, and if you've jumped the gun and done the prep work and you're trying to memorize stuff,
right.
You come in and it's a whole new script.
You're over-prepared. You know? Yeah.
Exactly. Like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
So you're having to excise these lines
right.
in your head and edit as you're learning the process.
Mm-hmm.
All that said, it's for me, it's about getting the text, whatever that text is, and diving in. And the big speeches, usually characters have a big, I think a lot of people refer to them as purple speeches, you know, whether it's to be or not to be, friends, Romans, countrymen, so forth. And those texts, that speeches that everybody knows.
Yeah.
So it's getting the text, finding those purple speeches, and getting those at least under my belt, being very familiar with them. Because once I'm in the space and you're looking into another pair of eyes, it's going to affect you. It's going to affect.
It's not just words on a page.
Yeah, it's not. It no longer becomes words on a page. And that becomes also a danger of memorizing beforehand because you have to allow space and room for your fellow actor to give you what you need in order to say what you got to say.
Yeah.
And then also for the other artists, because the lighting, I mean, you go through the process and once we get on stage, you understand that the lighting designer has this cool effect or very purposeful thing happening with the clothes or with that timing of what's happening in the scene itself. And then that is going to affect how you say what you say.
Sure.
And so yeah, there are all these elements that, of course, layer on, and that there's a flexibility that must be held when you're holding that text in you as you're going through the process.
Yeah. So, and I imagine that's what really
challenge.
Brings it to life, right? So it's not just this kind of old rarefied thing. It's like a fresh experience every time. I have to go back for a second because I got caught up with the purple speech. Why do they call it purple?
I think it has to do with purple was a color of royalty.
Uh-huh.
So
like those parts that really stand out.
That really stand out. I mean, the color, do the royalty, the best, top, you know, whatever. And, you know, it's the purple speech.
Well, our color is purple with Syncreate. So, you know.
Yeah.
There we go. Mm-hmm. So, another thing I want to kind of delve into a little bit. So you played football in high school. You were very athletic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you bring an athleticism to your roles. You talk about it in your bio, which we'll share in the show notes. But, you know, in some of the clips that you sent me as we were preparing for this, you know, these like fight scenes or whatever, you know, you have this really amazingly embodied quality in your work. And so this is something that we've talked about at different points on the show, kind of embodiment and how creativity lives in our bodies.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And how you, you know, with your particular background in athletic training, how you bring that to the stage.
Yes. I feel that that was my bridge for me of being a competitive athlete, of being in that process of practice.
Yeah.
I had a coach say, you don't practice perfect. There is perfect practice in order to perform once that whistle blows in competition. And I think through the years from elementary into adolescence, having that program, having that process be a part of my daily life was something that was just born just in me and brought out what was innate already there. And when I translated that into, when I found the love for theater and the love for performing and just finding what was just kind of meshing with me and how I approached the work, it was that physicality. It was that preparation, that physical preparation that I found was my way in, you know, way into the text.
Yeah.
You know, I say with the words, but it was even getting the words, and I couldn't just sit at my desk and memorize. I always, always had to be up on my feet and moving.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, in that moving, I would discover, oh, my body naturally went to this place when I came to this phrase.
Uh-huh.
And then that led me to think, well, why am I saying this phrase? Because this is happening to this character this time and so forth and so on. And for me, it was just that, making that character more real, more relatable, more personable, more human,
yeah,
as you mentioned, of and being able to use that physicality in those particular ways.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. And I hadn't, you know, maybe made the connection between, of course, it makes perfect sense, but like the athletic training and then that translating into performance, not only in terms of how we use our bodies, but in terms of just that idea of practice and discipline, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great.
I had a fellow classmate of ours.
Yes.
Catherine.
Yes.
She mentioned to me one time, we were out of school, but we were out and she said, what you're doing, realize, is a walk of faith and courage.
Wow.
And discipline. And she said this to me years ago, and thinking about it, it's like, yeah, you know, of 'cause there are a lot of unknowns.
Exactly.
You know, in life in general, but in this career path, it's becoming, it is the becoming okay with the unknown or with the uncertainty and pushing beyond that. And that's where that faith comes in and that courage to keep going. And that discipline has to be there in order to do that.
Yes.
So it's, yeah.
I mean, I think it takes courage, you know, that moment that you described in college, right? That sort of initial spark. And then that moment where you're like, well, what do I really love to do? And am I going to take that leap of faith to pursue this path that is not generally seen as particularly practical, right?
Sure.
Or same thing with me, with music. There was always that, well, you know, do I pursue music or do I do the practical thing? And there's a lot of societal pressure, right? To just go do the telecom job or whatever it is. So it takes courage to pursue that creative path. You know, I believe we all have creativity within us, but some choose to, you know, to walk down that path professionally, as you have.
Yeah.
And you're right, it is persistence and it is discipline.
Perseverance.
Yes. It doesn't just come. Right.
No.
Yeah. Well, and on the kind of physicality note, you know, sometimes you go see a Shakespeare play and, you know, even in these contemporary times, there can be a little bit of this like rarefied way of speaking or things like that. And I think there's lots of actors out there that they may be, you know, good, fine actors, but they don't have as much the physical presence, or like there's a stiffness. Like I'm doing Shakespeare, so I have to, you know, be in this particular way, and it's not fully embodied. And,
sure.
And that's something that just really stood out to me about your performances. So,
thank you. And it goes to training as well.
Yeah.
You being in New York, you hear about the big programs of Yale, Juilliard, Harvard, and going to Shakespeare in the Park, the Delacorte in Central Park, or seeing things around town, you see these individuals who went through these programs, and the training has that. There's a similarity in the training, and I would say that there is a great physicality to it, and how these particular individuals are to take that. You can tell the difference with folks and where they are in the training and how comfortable and confident they are into using their bodies to express the text in all that it could and can be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because the same words said in different ways can have a completely different impact.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
So I know you kind of more recently took a shift from being an actor into moving into a director role with a production that you did in Houston. Was that last year? Elijah Broke the Gate. So tell us about that and what it was like to kind of move into the director role.
Man, Melinda, it was great. It really was. I came into contact with the playwright when I was a guest artist at Abilene Christian University down in Texas. And she had experienced child loss. And out of that grief and out of that experience, her catharsis was writing these pieces, kind of these choreo poems, if you will. And she wrote several pieces, and in her research, she found other creatives in the area who wanted to be involved. And they happened to experience that too, them as well as their partners. So, so she was kind of, she was the spearhead for it. And it comes back to you. She spearheaded this book. It was in book form, and she adapted it into a play. And we were talking one day, I was visiting, and she mentioned that she was having trouble nailing down a director. And I had always, you know, I had directed small projects here and there and worked with my students, but this was an opportunity to be with professionals and bring this to life. And yes, a little intimidating, not having gone through that experience. But again, even though I wasn't familiar with the content.
Yeah.
But the context of loving and losing, of those situations, I was familiar with, and the words and how her and her colleagues put those words together.
Yeah.
That really drew me to it. And as I read these pieces, I began to envision, you know, and I think there's another step in the process. When I come to a piece and I'm reading it, and all of a sudden, if there are images
yes
in that just coming unbidden.
Yes.
That begin to manifest in my mind, and I'm visualizing as I'm reading, mm-hmm. or maybe I read and I pause and I'm just in this moment of reflection. And if the story is continuing to go or continue or just kind of playing on the screen of my mind, that's when I know.
Like, yes. Oh, This is something good. Yeah.
Yeah. And it captured me and it made me sit up and lean in.
Mm.
And a couple of weeks went by after our initial conversation and she circled back to me and she said, you know, if you're still interested, my director didn't come through. And it wasn't just about a director. Because of our conversation, she said, I would like you to be on board with this.
Yeah.
And I flew down there and it was a short process, but we dug in and she allowed me to have liberty because it was all women speaking.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And she allowed me the liberty of, as I came to her and said, you know, I'm reading this section and I hear a male voice who's expressing this experience, whether it's pain, whether it's joy or whatever. It's like, I hear a male voice. Can we do this? So she allowed me the opportunity to say, okay, we went out and we found a male actor who could, you know, cast. He was great, really solid guy. And we had a child actor and the rest were women. And there were moments that we found to blend these voices to where it was a woman speaking. We had, you know, I said, what if the child says this?
Yeah.
So, and in that, and I think this speaks to the collaborative art form of theater in itself. We talked about it. She listened. We kind of tested it out. We got into the rehearsal process. Great child actor. He really was great. And we had him read it. And while the finer points of staging, he still need to grow into, it was something to hear the text that was usually, you know, in her mind this way. Now we have this adolescent voice saying it, and it lifted it up and it gave it a different dynamic. And like I mentioned, just the collaborative art form of theater.
Yeah.
It was able to come together. We would change that through the whole process. It really developed into something very fruitful. And the night we performed, we had a counselor sit in, very, of course, sensitive topics. And it was great to have a counselor in the house. So after the show, during the talk back, we had, this counselor present, and some women and their partners expressed, oh, we went through this, and we were able to have a dialogue.
Yes.
That's what's getting to.
Yes.
To have a dialogue and to really explore a little bit, certainly not a whole therapeutic session.
Right.
But answer some questions and really have a space where people can express and say how they were affected by what they saw.
Yeah.
So that, as a director, being able to help shepherd that into being.
Absolutely.
And help those actors craft, you know, their performances. It was great putting on that other hat.
Yeah.
And being in that place of kind of sitting back and just kind of, yeah, you're on the right track, you know, being that cheerleader.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. And then just getting that immediate feedback, right?
Sure.
With the audience, yeah. and with the therapist. That's amazing.
Added bonus.
Yeah.
Added bonus. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm mindful of the time. It's flying by.
Sure it is.
But you mentioned a little earlier, and I wanted to kind of come back to this. You know, you've also done a lot of teaching in different contexts, you know, the schools, kids of various ages, university. And so I'm wondering, maybe for people starting out, or, you know, for the students you've worked with, you've worked mm-hmm. with. What's the biggest piece of advice or encouragement you might give to, you know, a young actor or somebody, you know, just starting out on their creative path?
The biggest piece, say yes.
Yeah.
I think looking back, there were instances where I was caught up in what I thought I needed to be doing,
right,
or something of that sense, and it really cut me off of experiences that would have fed even more into my artistic growth.
Yeah.
And not necessarily talking about regret, but it's like, I know there were just saying yes, you know, to opportunities and not putting any judgment on anything. You know, that would be my biggest piece of advice.
I think saying especially when we're
involved.
Young. True. And I think when we're younger, you know, we are, as you said earlier, just sometimes trying to do what we think is right or what we're supposed to be doing, or we're just, mm-hmm. you know, learning how life works. Right.
Yeah.
And sometimes that can hold us back in certain ways.
Certainly.
So
yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I love the yes.
Saying yes.
Yeah. So, part of this podcast, we talk about creativity, psychology,
yes.
and spirituality. And sometimes mm-hmm. the spiritual element comes forward overtly and sometimes not so much. But I am curious if there is sure. a spiritual component to the work for you.
For me, as I mentioned about the walk of faith and courage,
yes,
I think for me, the faith comes into the day-to-day and the living of what of being a creative, what
yeah.
that means for you.
Yeah.
I know that I was brought up in the Christian church,
mm-hmm.
and as I've grown, I guess maturing in the faith and finding what God is for me, or how I recognize faith in the texts that I read,
yeah.
or faith, you know, you hear the expression of the spirit, how the spirit moves.
Yes.
Or I know my auntie was always fond of saying, "Oh, my spirit just didn't agree with them." You know,
that's a great
so,
one.
You know, and I was like, "Oh, okay, auntie." You know, and you know, my mom's taking it to saying it now, and it's like, not that I don't like this person, just my spirit don't agree with this person,
right?
You know, and
that's a great way to say it, actually.
Yeah, I can't quite put my finger on it,
right?
But there's something, and it's like, okay. A more positive, productive way of saying it is, spirits just don't agree. It's not personal. It's just, you know, we're not in that, you know, you go along your merry way. And I think that faith element of not necessarily focusing on, because we can get so easily caught up in the grind of it and the pleasing of it, and you're looking at people, and for me, instead of focusing on what's here, focusing on the above, focusing on the beyond, and that there's a greater purpose and a higher calling to what we're doing. Because I think I heard an older actor say this once, that in a talk back, that at its best, whether it's Shakespeare or a really good contemporary play, that moment on stage when you look into another pair of eyes and you're allowing those playwright's words to sing, that is a spiritual moment.
Yes.
That there is a communing that is going on in the space between the performers. And then also that extends out into the audience. So it's kind of almost a triumvirate between performers, the audience, and back again. And this communing is, for me, spiritual.
Yeah.
And the only way to occupy that space is you can't be caught up in this mess, you know,
right?
The data and stuff. You gotta be, you know, you focus on the text, you focus on the vision that the director has set forth. It has to be beyond that. It has to be above that. And that's the only way you're going to get to that place of communion that the audience, you know, of course, on one level, they paid to see it, but also they've come of their own free will.
Yeah.
You're there of your own free will. And we're all, at the end of the day, creating this space where this story is, whatever it is lifted up. And as human beings, we're there.
Yeah.
And yes, theater, all the way back to the Greek times. That's the beauty of it.
Yeah.
That's the spirituality of it.
Yeah.
And for me, it is rooted in that and how that spirit moves us to tell these stories in the ways that we do.
Beautiful. I think that's a great place to end. I mean, I can't really, you know, just that all art, I think, you know, theater, music, art, it's about expression. It's about communication. It's about connecting. And when you're in that space, it's the best feeling in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It really is.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
One of, just real quick, a book we read in grad school that was another kind of pivot point for me was Rollo May's Courage to Create.
The Courage to Create. Yes.
Yeah. And
wonderful book.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Indeed it was. Perfect. I found so much in it that applied to the work and to the life that we were beginning to lead.
Yeah. It's a great one. And for those of you out there not familiar, it's a pretty quick read. It's not too thick, but it's very profound. So
powerful, impactful.
Great. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for having
me. Doing this with me. We've been talking about doing this for a while, so it's great to see it actually happen. And if people want to find out more about you and your work, what's the best way?
The best place is my LinkedIn page under Rin Jackson.
Great.
I keep that page up with things that I'm currently working on, things that I have worked on, and things that I support, things that I love and am inspired by as well.
Perfect. We'll put a link in the show notes.
Great.
And thank you so much. I think you're off to Cincinnati next for your next production.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cincinnati Shakespeare Company, the production of Amen Corner by James Baldwin and Julius Caesar.
Wonderful. Well, good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah. Awesome. So for our creativity pro tip today, I usually do one of these at the end of the episode, a little takeaway that people can try on their own. So we're not all professional actors, but we've touched on quite a few times in this show, you know, the physicality of creativity and how creativity lives in our body. And we actually touched on this in the previous episode that we recorded for the show as well. So maybe kind of taking that out into the world and seeing how do we express ourselves through gesture, through, you mentioned looking into another person's eyes, Ren, you know, just to the gaze, the ways that we connect and that we use our physical bodies and the creativity that we have in our physical bodies in order to connect and communicate. And maybe just bringing a little more attention to that in your everyday life and see how it might enhance your interactions. So at Sync Create, we're here to support your creative endeavors. So if you have an idea for a project or a new venture and you'd like our help, please reach out to us for one-on-one coaching or join our 2024 Sync Create coaching group. We'll be taking people through the creative process from start to finish using our model of play, plan, and produce from our Sync Create book. And we are recording today from Record ATX Studios in Austin and with Ren in Indianapolis. Thanks again so much for being with us.